Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. You're listening to Career Crossroads, and if you're new here, welcome. And if you're not new, welcome back. I'm Jonathan Colleton, and this is the podcast where I talk to people about all the pivots, changes, and life events that led them to their current career path. This week, I'm talking to Ken Coleman, and we're going to talk about his journey from paycheck to purpose, which is the name of his new book, but I think also describes the path that he has taken in his career. Ken is America's career coach, and you may have heard him on his nationally syndicated daily radio show, The Ken Coleman Show. His show is live on Sirius XM as part of the Ramsey Network right before Dave Ramsey's show, and Ken talks to callers about all the career challenges that they're facing. Now, I've had a few people reach out over the last year or so and ask if I was interested in reading their new book and interviewing them, but I've never said yes because they just weren't always a good fit. They didn't have the career pivots that I'm really interested in. And then, way back in August, the PR team of Ken Coleman reached out and asked if I wanted to read his new book that was coming out in November and interview him. And knowing what I know about Ken Coleman and his pivot from politics into broadcasting, I knew that would be a fantastic interview. And I mean, come on, how could I not get excited about interviewing America's career coach? I thought, of course, this will be a wonderfully beneficial interview for both of us, although probably more so for me, and I happily said yes, and we set up the interview. With all that said, let's get to the interview, and then afterwards, we're going to talk about what we can learn from Ken's career path. I'm joined today by Ken Coleman. Ken, thank you for being with me today.
Happy to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here and talk about not only your career, but your new book. And we are absolutely going to get to the book. But first, we've got to talk about how you got to the point of writing this book. So I want to talk about your career path. Can we go back in time and tell me what your upbringing was like? Where were you raised? What things were influencing you when you were a teenager?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I was raised in a house where there was a great appreciation for history and a great focus on politics and then a great focus on people because of what my dad did as a pastor. He loved and served people, my mom as well. And so that was the environment that I grew up in. And there was a, because of that focus, that kind of that three-part focus that was prevalent, it was very clear to me and my brother that there was a purpose and a role that we were supposed to fill. That just was part of the normal conversation in my house. And so that shapes somebody, you know. And so, you know, you're kind of forced with either you embrace that mindset and that view of the world, or you reject it, and I embraced it big time.
Did you have a specific thing that you thought was your purpose, or just this general feeling of, I have a purpose, and at some point as I move through life, I will figure out what that purpose is?
No, at 16, I very much felt like I was supposed to serve people in politics and drive and create, lead policy that would make people's lives better. That was absolutely a very clear dream for me starting at 16, and I pursued that, you know. And at 22, I wind up, you know, as a special assistant to the governor of Virginia, and I'd worked on through four campaigns by that time.
Wow.
And so, you know, I got in it pretty early and had some success and was on that path and stepped out of it to get into the private sector to build a non-political business leadership resume. That was all part of the plan. And as you know, in the book, I unveil, you know, at the very beginning, the very first chapter, 2 a.m. in the morning, laying awake at night, another sleepless night, watching awful infomercials about knives that can cut through tires, just trying to fall asleep. As I write in the book, I was sleepless in Suckville. And because I was in a point where I knew it wasn't politics anymore. What had happened was, as I was pursuing that path and leaning into it and looking towards the future, it became clear to me I had no passion for it anymore. And I don't need to get into all the reasons why, but the reality was is that that was a very discouraging time, a time of disillusionment, because I'd been so purposeful, so on target for it. And, but, but realizing that wasn't it. But what is it? What's that pivot? Did I waste a lot of my life? What's wrong with me? Am I delusional? I mean, there's a whole cocktail of voices that'll really mess with you. So as you know, that's where the book opens. And so it was in the season of wrestling through that I began to see, it's broadcasting, but that's terrifying because I don't have any training. I don't have any experience. Not even sure if I have any skill. So that's what happened for me, is realizing this early dream I had is no longer the dream, and then learning how to process and move through that.
All right. So let's break down some of these choices and sort of the practical steps that you took, because I think helping people understand that there are ways that you can pivot and that you just need to take a step back sometimes and think about what decision to make, that's one of the things I try to do on this podcast. So when politics was still in your mind's eye, when it's what you thought you wanted to do, graduating high school, was there a practical step in your mind that was, I'm going to go to further education and get a degree, and that is the appropriate path for me? Or was it volunteering, working on different political campaigns? What was the thing that you thought would get you to that first goal that you had?
Yeah, I like this question because, I was always the guy who just felt like, I was in college, but I took a semester off when offered the opportunity to work on my first congressional race. So the summer of I was a rising junior, so sophomore year. And then I come home that summer and through a series of relationships, get wind of a guy that my dad knew who was going to run for Congress. And so I had my dad call him and, hey, he'll do anything for you. And he said, yeah, I'll hire you to be my driver. And I jumped in and, got in so well and impressed him, got his ear that they asked me to stay on and start doing grassroots campaign work. And so I took a semester off of college to do that. And I was always the guy who just felt like that I needed to just get in and get connected and show people that I could do it. I just was always that way. Let me learn. Let me observe. I don't want to sit in a classroom and study Machiavellian theory. I want to get out there and friggin' do it, right?
Yeah.
That was just who I was. That's who I am. I've always been a learner by observation. So I kind of had that going for me, and it kind of led me into this, which I now, I wrote a book on this called The Proximity Principle. And I came up with The Proximity Principle just looking back on my life. Like, how did I do it? And it wasn't some genius. It wasn't that I knew better than anybody else. It's just, I was conditioned that way. That's the way I learned. And so it helped me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So obviously higher ed, there was value in it. But as you're saying, the idea of really just getting out there and getting that hands-on practical experience, being in the room talking to people, that was the thing that you thought was going to be more beneficial to you, at least at that point in time. Did you think that you were definitely going to go back to your higher ed program right after that term that you had taken off? Or did you think maybe it would be, maybe you'll go back, maybe you won't, depending on how this goes?
I love that you asked that question, because when the campaign ended in November, it was pretty much expected by my parents. And thus I kind of fell into that, like, I'm going to go back the next semester. So I was a semester behind. And I did go back. But I will tell you, when I went back, I was rotting away. My soul was out in the field.
Yeah.
Literally the equivalent, if we've ever seen any of these movies, sure, somebody's seen this movie or the scene or something where a warrior, if you will, has been injured or whatever, and they get desk duty, or a policeman. It's like, I want to get out there in the fight. I don't want to be stuck at a desk. I've tasted battle and I don't want to sit in the office. That's what was going on. And so I left. I lasted, I think, maybe 3 more semesters. I honestly can't remember, because I'm just going to tell you this. When it comes to politics, I don't think there's much value in higher education as it relates to politics. Not the true definition of it. That's going to freak some people out.
No, I understand.
If you get offended, get over it. I'm not bashing higher education. I'm just saying there's certain fields where there's just not a whole lot of value in anything you're going to learn in the classroom. And so I left and I never got my degree, and I'm never going to get it.
Yeah. I actually went initially to university for a history politics double major, and I switched out of that politics major in my second year when it just felt to me like it wasn't the thing that would help me if I did want to go into that field at some point. It seemed like, yeah, practical hands-on experience was the way to go in that regard. And I've turned away from that. And I know that you did as well. So tell me, I know you might not want to get into it too much, but with politics, your goal you mentioned before was helping people through policy. So as you got through your 20s, did you feel like you were making real strides in that career and that you were very much headed towards the ultimate goal that you had? Or when was it that these sort of doubts started creeping in and you thought, I maybe need to look at something else?
Well, the first crack of doubt would have been, I was working for the governor of Virginia. At this point, I'm 23. And I begin to just see a lot of hypocrisy. I begin to see a lot of lip service and no action. I begin to see what I felt was, this machine, this thing is not as efficient as I thought it was. It's not as helpful as I thought it was. This is a game. There's a lot of nonsense going on here. And I'm keeping this super high level because nobody tuned in to hear me wax on about problems with our political system and political leaders. But it really, at a soul level, it was almost, it's like the kid who's got the romantic notion of something and then they live enough life and they go, oh, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it was that. So the doubts kind of came in there early. And then I went into the business career. I had two great business opportunities, and I was doing all that, and I was still going, all right. And I was in Atlanta working for John Maxwell, leadership guru. And I even picked a neighborhood that was in a district that I thought, well, if I run for state senate or something like that, like I have still kind of walking through it all, trying to determine when's the right time for me to step out and run. But I now look back on it and I realize I was delaying it because it wasn't in the belly. And I get to that point when I'm in my early 30s, probably 31, 32, where I'm now really starting to go, this isn't it. I'm kidding myself. I'm kicking the can down the road here and I need to freaking get to this. Like, what's going on here? Why am I dragging my feet? And so that began the process of really examining it. And then I got super clear that it wasn't politics. The problem was there wasn't anything else on the other side of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? There was no substitute in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's very real. And that's, you know, it's not always a simple, clean, oh, I'm going to move this out and this is the absolute substitute. That wasn't the case for me.
Yeah, not having something then very specific that you wanted to move into, how did you identify what your next steps might be? Because politics can give you a wide variety of skills, but I guess it very much depends on what you're doing. And so I've spoken to a couple other people actually who worked in one very oddly similar who was in politics and was a driver at one point for someone. And he's actually now a priest. And I've talked to somebody else who's pivoted from policy to working in lobbying. And for you, what were you able to look at the skills you had developed through politics and identify those as something that you thought, okay, what can I then do with the skills I have? And if that was the case, were you doing that only because you just need to do something while you're still trying to get clarity on what the ultimate new goal should be?
I think it's more the first part of the question, which is I begin to go, okay, what am I really, really good at? So I think that's, and again, as you know, in the book, Get Clear, the first stage,
yeah,
we begin to identify talent, passion, mission as the ultimate methodology for people to go, okay, how do I really figure out who I am, my awareness? My awareness comes down to looking into who I am, the elements, and that's talent, passion, mission. Talent, what you do best. Passion, work you love to do. Mission, results that matter. Now, understand, I didn't have that construct back then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I've developed that as I go back and look into it, but I love your question because what I did know was what I was good at.
Okay.
And so I begin to look at that. So I begin to go, what am I really good at? And I'm not good at many things, and that's not false humility. I'm really not. I'm a bit of a disaster. I have ADHD. I'm really only quite good at communication skills. I'm good at communicating publicly, communicating one-on-one. I'm good at listening. I've got some discernment skills. And in the moment, I can discern, I can read some things. These are some people skills that I have, and I've always had that. You know, I can make people laugh. You know, I was always that kid. I was always the lead in the play, always doing impersonations, always the class clown, you know, always raising my hand to lead a chapel service. Right? I enjoyed, and I was good at, being in front of people. And so in those moments, I was like, I'm good at this. And everybody's always told me that you're quick on your feet. All my teachers, oh, you're so quick on your feet. I heard that my whole life. Oh, you're so quick on your feet. I didn't even know what it meant. Okay. So I began to kind of do an assessment of what do I know? Where's my confidence? Because I was shaken. And so this is really huge. So we start with talent because talent becomes the thing that we can get some confidence on. Well, the people have always told me, you're good at this. You're natural at this. And by the way, everybody's got some answers to that. So I really focused on that. And then I said, well, you know what? I really love it. I've always loved having people look at me. And I don't mean like a model, okay? I'm talking like I love the pressure. I've always loved the pressure. You know, look at me. Either I make you laugh or I make you pay attention, right? That's what I knew. I had a little bit of a body of work there to go, I really love this kind of stuff. Because I would go, what did you love about politics? You know, so I looked at that. You know, what did I love about it? Well, there are two main things that stuck out. Number one, I loved the stump speech, right? I loved, you know, I was the bag man is what they call it in politics. So a lot of my early jobs, I was the guy that was always on the hip of the candidate. I had his briefcase, campaign stickers, notebook to write a number down, you know, like I was the guy watching the room going, hey, there's a big donor over there. You need to go say hi to him. I mean, that was like, that's what I did. And so I was always off stage watching these candidates do these stump speeches. And I'm standing there going, oh, I'd love to do that. And so you got to dig into that stuff. What'd you love about it? And then I loved the one-on-one, the retail politics, to people telling these politicians their struggles and their challenges. Will you help me here? That's what I craved. So those were clues. Okay. So then you start to go from there. You go, okay, well, what do I know from this? And so what I realized is that it wasn't politics, but I absolutely knew it was going to be a forward-facing public role because I know that I love communicating publicly and I love helping people. I have a real heart for people. So that's all I knew. And I'll tell you the story. We didn't have kids at the time and I'm going through this and I'm wrestling and, my wife is out of town with some girls on a girls trip. And I lived a very, very glamorous life. And most nights I would end the night by watching Larry King Live. A lot of young people don't even know who he is, with Legendary Interviewer. It's my favorite show on CNN. And it was just elbow to elbow conversations. I just love that stuff. And so I was watching an interview one night. He was doing it with Oprah. And I'm sitting on the couch by myself. And he asked her, Oprah, would you ever run for Senate from Illinois or would you ever run for president? This is at the height of her popularity. And she's bigger than anything else on the planet. And she quickly dismissed it and said, absolutely not. And he asked the right follow-up question. Why are you so like cut and dry on that essentially? And by the way, we share the story in the book. And she says, I, Larry, have more influence every day through my television show, my O magazine, my live event tour, I have more influence through those things than I ever would in politics. And the minute that I would run or become an elected official, I would lose so much of that influence. And it was like God himself reached down and put a tuning fork in my chest and flicked it. And I had been wrestling with what does all this mean? What I enjoy doing, what I'm good at doing. And it was in that moment that for the first time I gave broadcasting a real look. I was like, Now the challenge with that is I didn't know which way to go. You know, so I began a several month exploration into, is it hard news and reading from a teleprompter and talking about some guy getting shot in the leg on the 101st block? Or I was like, well, I don't want to do that. You know, is it sports? Cause I kind of went that direction cause I do love sports. So that was, and we write about this in the book. So anyway, that's the moment where early on, I didn't have the construct that I teach now, which is I'm on purpose when I use what I do best to do work I love, to produce results that matter to me. I didn't have that sentence. Yeah. You know, I didn't have all the fill in the blanks. Okay. But I knew where to start looking. And so that was the beginning of the process.
I love that you mentioned Larry King, because that was something that stuck out to me. And I was trying to figure out where in this conversation I could throw in and unpack that or tell me more, because I'm old enough to remember my parents watching Larry King anyway. Yeah. But I'm going to have to go back and watch some of his old interviews. It was something I was thinking about after reading what you had said about him in there. All right. So broadcasting then becomes this very strong interest, and you have to navigate what areas of broadcasting fit for you. And you mentioned, and I know you talk about in the book, you get into sports for a while, and the path through broadcasting was something that it's not an immediate level of success, right? It takes time to sort of build yourself up in that area. So what were some of the things that you had to do to sort of pivot from one job to the next? I know you talked about connecting with people who you knew, people who were, you know, not quite great friends, but contacts, people you were connected with that might know someone in that industry, and you were able to leverage that. So tell me a little bit more about that, because that is something I found really useful in the book as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked this question, because early on when I first began to go, okay, I think this is something I'd really enjoy, you know, my first thought was, I don't know anybody in broadcasting and I don't have any training and any experience. So this feels delusional, right? This feels like this is nuts. But what's interesting is as I began to wrestle through that, I did realize that I actually knew some people. You know, I knew people who knew some people, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is really fun because I talk about this all the time on the Ken Coleman Show. I talk about this in the book. One of the great excuses people use for not striking out on the path that they long to walk is they go, I don't know anybody. It's total garbage. Total garbage. We know everybody we need to know to get started. We know everybody we need to know to do the thing that we're created to do. Now, you got to work that. All right. You got to work it. So, you know, some examples. I realized, you know, oh, my wife's cousin is an NBC sports reporter. I know him. Don't know him very well, but I've got a great connection there, right? Hell, I know this guy who's the broadcasting voice, TV voice of the Atlanta Braves. I know him because I met him in a John Maxwell event. I got his email. You know, so I begin to go, oh, I know some people. And I begin to reach out and get their advice. And then I knew some other people who knew a producer who went to the same church as me. And so had lunch with that TV producer. And so I had all these connections that were 2 or maybe 3 degrees away, but I had the relationships. And so you just have to kind of look and turn over some rocks a little bit. You got to ask for people to help you. It's the most underrated question in the world. Will you help me?
Yeah. Something you said about that was like, what's the worst thing that can happen? You can be rejected. I forget the exact wording you use, but yeah. I resonated with that, because at the end of the day, if you ask somebody for a coffee to sit down and talk about what their career has been like and the steps they took, and they say no, 2 weeks from now, they're going to forget about it. And so the embarrassment is all what you're feeling about your concern of rejection, but you will never know if that opportunity could become something unless you ask the question. So
that's right.
Obviously that's something from your own experience. You did this and that has become a basis. Yeah. And I can see it as we're talking here, all these things that happened to you in your life to get you to where you are today. While you're saying, you know, I didn't have the framework for this back then. Well, that was you sort of inventing the framework for yourself. And it seems to me like the experience you had directly is what led to every different stage that you've identified in this book.
Yeah. You know, I the encouragement that I want the reader to get, or just the listener, if they don't even buy the book, I want you to get that there is unbelievable power. There's unbelievable opportunity in just moving forward. I mean, you know, the thing that frustrates me in this personal growth and, you know, we see stuff on social media and YouTube and we follow these influencers and what we don't realize is many of them paid for the amount of followers they have. It's a total sham. total sham. And they made a bunch of money in another business, and now all of a sudden they're out there telling you the secret to success, and they're standing by a private jet or whatever it is they're doing. And it's all a bunch of, you know, lofty cotton candy. The reality is that you will be successful if you are fulfilling your unique role, and your greatness is in your uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
Greatness isn't about status or dollar signs in your bank account. Greatness is when you fulfill your unique role, whether that is a teacher or a lab technician, an educator, an engineer, a pastor, a professor, a mechanic, you know, a CEO, a janitor, a programmer. It doesn't matter. But what matters is that you keep moving forward. And opportunities will come your way. You will get better, but you're going to have to stay active. And it's not about leaps and bounds. It's not about short-circuiting success like Instagram influencers will tell you. It is about showing up every day. And you show up again. And you keep showing up. You show up when you're tired. You show up when you're hurt. You show up when you have, honestly, no belief. But you just show up.
Yeah.
That's what I'm preaching.
Yeah. There's that saying that a lot of people I've heard from friends who work in personal fitness, that a 10-minute workout is still better than no workout. So even on those days when you're tired, just do something. And just what you're saying, like, just keep moving forward, take those small steps. So I love hearing that in a career context, as it's often something I hear about more in a fitness context. So tell me about how you got to the point in broadcasting then of having the Ken Coleman Show and doing what you're doing now, from the early beginnings of that discovery and then reaching out to all these people that you knew that might be able to help you break into that industry. You talk about in a book that you knew it was going to be a long process and you knew it would take time. And so what were the major pivoting points for you along that journey that where you realized, like, this is a major milestone for me, which milestones should be celebrated. That was one of my favorite things you wrote in the book. What were those major milestones for you? The things that led you directly? You can look back and say this and this and this are what got me from an interest in broadcasting to what I'm doing now.
One milestone was starting a leadership podcast with a leadership company in Atlanta called Catalyst. Talking my buddies into this is I remember seeing an article in Fast Company magazine about podcasting. And this is, by the way,
way back.
This is going to date myself here. This is when, like, we literally had iPods.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was amazing that you could listen to YouTube on this little white thing that had a circular navigating system on it. And it was called an iPod. And we listened to music on it. And then all of a sudden people got outside of music and Apple said, well, you could record audio. And you can put audio out on this, and it's called a podcast. And people were like, what? And I read an article on it, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. And so I go talk to my buddies about it that were running this leadership organization. And I said, hey, I want to get more broadcasting experience. This is podcasting, but I want to get really good at interviewing. That's something I'm going to have to get good at. And I love interview shows and blah, 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 blah. I'm very curious. And I said, I'll host it. I think I can do a good job. I'll host it for you for free if you let me be the host. And because they had a good sized platform. And so we started that thing and it became one of the biggest leadership podcasts in that particular space at the time. And this was before everybody was doing podcasts. Okay. So we're talking like 2004, 2005. So, I mean, when I say that I was one of the early people in that thing, I really was. And so that was a milestone because that's how I got good at doing interviews. And that's really what was my calling card early on, was that I kind of shaped this reputation as being a really good interviewer. So that was a milestone. Another milestone was getting on local talk radio. I paid my way on. You know, I got a meeting with the owner of the station. And I said, hey, I'll pay my way on. What are you going to charge me for an hour? I mean, just light the cards out. And he said, $250 an hour. I go, done. And, you know, went out and found my own sponsors for it. But that took several months. So I just paid $1,000 a month. to do radio. That was a milestone, though, to get on and learn how to do it. And another milestone was when, you know, I got some national exposure through one of my guests on the show, and it put me all over the map for about 4 days, the Little Ken Coleman Show, a Saturday radio show on WDUN, and the owner was so impressed with how I handled the media on it. He goes, hey, I want you to do 2 hours every day, drive time, 5 to 7 p.m., you in? I was like, yeah. And so I had to figure out what kind of a show was that going to be. That was a milestone to create a show by myself, no staff, to do it every day for 2 hours live on the radio. That was a milestone. Dave Ramsey, you know, 2 years after that, calling me and say, hey, I want you to come here and take over all the hosting stuff for Ramsey Solutions. I want you to take over the Entree Leadership Podcast, one of the top leadership podcasts in the world, still is. That was a milestone. 2 years after, 3 years after that, you know, him telling me, hey, SiriusXM is going to do a Ramsey Solutions channel, and you're going to be the other live show. You're the only other guy that wants to do live radio. Well, we're going to do it. You ready? And I wasn't. And he's like, you're going to have an hour before me leading into my show every day. You know what? So that's a milestone. You know, I mean, I could go on and on and on. Yeah. And those are mile markers. But what I will tell you is you're hearing some of the fun breakthrough. But some of the mile markers that matter most are just showing up and not quitting. Some of the mile markers that matter most are, I have no idea how this is going to play out. I have no clue, but I'm going to show up and take a broadcasting class with a bunch of 20-somethings at the age of 33. Completing that class was a mile marker. Nobody knows about it. It's not impressive, but that's a mile marker. Because those breakthrough miles, right? Mile 6, mile 23, mile 347, those don't exist without all those little miles that have no sass. They're not sexy. There's nothing exciting about them. You just kept going. And that's what I want people to catch.
Mm-hmm. So all these milestones lead you to your full-time job now, which is a variety of different things. You've got the Ken Coleman Show. You've written numerous books, including your newest book, From Paycheck to Purpose, which is available now at the time of this interview. So if you're listening to this, links will be in the show notes to go and grab this book. Tell me about when the idea for this particular book first came to be. What was the first sort of kernel where you thought, hey, maybe there's something here? Let me jot this down and see what I've got.
Well, in any area of life, if you are trying to bring transformation to people, so whether this is a business or a person, and you are trying to provide transformation, that could be in someone's health, so nutrition or exercise, in their money, of course, Ramsey Solutions, we help people get out of debt and save and invest. Married life, parenting, and then, you know, in the work that I do, you know, meaningful work, purpose, experience your purpose. So if you got people that are in a place where they're not where they want to be, and they've got an idea of where they want to be, so there's a gap. In order to help anybody in any of those areas I just listed, you're going to have to give them a clear path. Okay, that's just reality. Or else it's too intimidating, right? Think about it. It's like looking at a mountain going, I'd like to get to the top of that mountain, but I have zero idea how in the world I'd ever get there. So what's that person going to do? They're not going to climb that mountain. So you've got to give people a clear path. Dave Ramsey models that, the baby steps, the 7 baby steps have helped millions and millions of people. So I knew that to be as effective as I wanted to be, that I was going to have to come up with a clear path too. Like when you talk about purpose, I got to tell you, I'm fighting an uphill battle on this. Because when you say purpose, it's daunting to people, right? It's super, super intimidating. And I'm trying to take the intimidation factor away. So you got to have a clear path. So for a couple of years, I came up with an acronym, DREAM. Nobody's even seen it. It was like 3 people in all Ramsey Solutions that ever saw it. It just wasn't right. I knew it wasn't right, but I was trying to come up with this. What's this thing where people can go, oh, you're telling me that I can actually discover my purpose and do it really well, and I can get how that would happen. And I couldn't come up with it, and I was frustrated. And so I was on vacation with my family, and I like to get up before everybody else on vacation and just have quiet. and certainly at the beach. My favorite thing to do is go down to the beach before the family and just sit there under the umbrella, feet in the sand, and the waves and the wind, and just sit there, just soak, okay? And so that particular day, I took down my moleskin and a pencil, my two favorite things when I want to think. And I sat there that day with a cup of coffee, and I asked myself, I was very frustrated. And I said, Coleman, stop thinking. I want you to feel this. How would you describe the path to purpose to a 17-year-old kid? And that's when I started writing. And it just flowed that day. And that's when I wrote Get Clear. You got to get clear first. Who are you? What is that thing you want? What's your mountain that you want to scale? And then it was like, okay, once you know that, you got to get qualified to climb the mountain. So I wrote Get Qualified. And it just came out of me. Get connected. While you're getting qualified, you better get connected. I started looking back at my journey. And I was like, while I was getting qualified, I was connecting like crazy. Okay, because that's where opportunities come, is from connections. Nobody's sitting around thinking about how they can help you. You got to get in front of them. And then it was like, boom, once the opportunity comes, guess what? You get started. And now you embrace the suck, right? Now it's like learning to ride a bike and I'm starting out and all that stuff. And then at some point, I'm going to get promoted. And then as I spend time in that get promoted stage, it's like climbing a ladder. I'm going to spend most of my professional time in the process of getting promoted if I'm on purpose. And eventually I'm going to step into the dream job where I am doing what I'm best at. Talent. I am performing work that I absolutely love. Passion. And I am producing results that I connect to deeply. Mission. And that's the dream job. Now what? Because I initially stopped there. But it was later, with some input from some people that I trust, they said, I think there's one more stage. And that is give yourself away. And that's where we've reached the income that we desire. Income's great. It's there. Impact is there too. But now it's all about, why would I keep working? Like, what am I dreaming about now? Now watch this. As I'm climbing stage 1 through 6, my view is naturally up. I'm looking up. When I get to the top, my view changes. Now I'm looking out. And I write about this at the very end of the book, the last chapter, Sir Edmund Hillary, the greatest explorer I think the world's ever known.
I'm glad you brought him up. I was going
to
bring him up.
He gets to the top of the mountain. And after his Sherpa climbing partner, and he puts some mementos down at the peak, you know, and they take some pictures, they begin to truly take in this view that no one's ever seen before. And they're seeing the world from the top. And then he sees another mountain range and he says, we're going to climb that one next. And that's what happened. So we're in the dream job and now we expand the dream and then we can repeat those 7 stages, right?
Yeah.
Get clear on what that next, you know, what's the next iteration of the dream. I'm in my sweet spot. I'm on purpose. That moves with me. And so that's how I came about the process. I looked back on my own life and my journey, and I just simplified it as best as I possibly could. And that became the 7 stages that I began to teach and use with callers on air and sat with it. Does it work? Is it right? And this is key. I didn't just write a book. I didn't come back from that beach trip and go, hey, I got a book in me. We tested it. We tried it. We sat with it. We lived with it. And then we felt, this is a book.
I love that you point out that stage 7 was initially not there and that mm-hmm. you had a lot of these ideas, but so much of what you talk about early on about Get Clarity is talking to other people. And you did that with this book. You talked through the stages, and that's when you get the hint from somebody else that maybe there's more to it. So I'm glad you point that out, because I think a lot of people assume that, or maybe it's people like me who just don't know any better, that when you've got an idea for a book, it's all your idea. But that's not always the case. And this book too is, it's very much a guidebook, which I enjoyed about it. And something that I found interesting that I wanted to ask about was, so I blew through it. I read it in like 48 hours. And then when I finished it, I thought to myself, I think I read this too fast, because I was breezing through stage 1 through, I think, somewhere about 4, clarity to get started. And this is partly because I think that's the things that I have already done in my own plan that's of right. making a career pivot. And then I got to stage five about getting promoted. And all of a sudden I sort of hit this wall, and I felt like I had to push through that stage in particular to get to the next stage. And afterwards it occurred to me, it's not that the content of it isn't useful or anything like that. Of course it is. It's that the stages very much align with where you are in your life, I think. And for me, because I'm only so far, I can really only get that far where the content is useful for me today. And it makes me think that a year from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, there's going to be a lot of value in people going back and reading. You don't even have to start at the beginning again, but start at the stage that you're in now and start with those steps. Because for me, maybe a year from now, I'll start to get promoted again. And maybe that's going to click more because I'm finally ready for that. It's hard to read when career pivots are such a daunting task. I think it can be hard to think so far ahead because what you're doing now can seem so difficult. I wanted to get your take on that, if that was kind of a totally out there opinion, or if that's something that you would agree with. Do you think that it is something where people can come back later and start at a particular stage because that's where they're at that point in time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the hope. I mean, I have no illusions that you can just walk through those seven stages in a short amount of time. There's just no way. Yeah. So I think that's the whole hope of the book, is that they go, oh, I read it and I see now this is the path. This is the path. So what stage am I in? So now I need to double down. And how do I get to the next stage? So my question for you is, you are in stage five. You aren't where you want to be, and you want to promote yourself, right? It's not, because if you're entrepreneurial, the stage five is still relevant to you too, because customers will promote you. The audience will promote you, right? Mm-hmm. So are you feeling that that's where you are now, or you're still in the get started stage?
I'm probably in the get promoted stage, actually. In fact, your interview on this podcast is the first sponsored episode I have. I'm finally making money doing this now. So I guess that would be the get promoted phase, because it's
now. Why'd you hit a wall there? What were you hitting a wall with?
Maybe it's fear of the amount of work that you have to do at that point in time. I picked out a quote earlier on in the book. Everybody's all in for the dream as long as it happens on their timeline. And I may have created this artificial timeline for myself when it comes to getting to the next sort of pivot in my career, purely because of the logistics of my day job, that I've actually moved down to working 80% full time because I needed more time to work on sure. this as a side project. And I think I've put this time limitation on myself that is not realistic. I mean, you talk about it. It took 10 years to go through your career in broadcasting and get where you really wanted to get. So that's probably why I felt like I hit a wall at that stage.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Everybody's got different psychology around that stuff. I would tell you that I think for you specifically, because the goal is to turn this thing into the full-time gig, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think things related to this.
Yeah, I think the first chapter and get promoted for you is you need to go revisit it, and you need to translate it very, very specifically. Know your role, accept your role, maximize your role. And that's your mantra right now. Yeah, your role right now is, I'm an entrepreneur. This is a side hustle. I'm building this thing. And you need to be grateful that you can do it. All right. So you're very clear that you're a young podcast or a growing podcast, and you got an audience, and it's going to take time. You know, it's that kind of thing. You need to apply it specifically to you, and then maximizing, doing your absolute best, getting better. So know your role, accept your role, maximize your role. Right now, you're in those early stages. That's your role, is to deliver value to the audience. And so the real takeaway is, as you know, in that chapter, is you need to stay focused on the now and win the now. The next will take care of itself. And that's a very difficult thing for people who have a very clear purpose and passion, and you do. So, yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be hitting a wall there. You should be going, all right, why am I hitting the wall? Let me own my junk here on this. What am I intimidated by? What's discouraging? And just own it, so that you go, okay, I know what I need to face. And then you will continue to promote yourself. Your audience will promote you.
This is great, Ken, because what I told people when I started this podcast in my introductory episode was this show is like therapy for me, and you just get to listen along as I hear about how other people got from where they were to where they wanted to be. And this is exactly the kind of advice that I was hoping would come out of it. And more particularly because this is sort of, you're more in the realm of what I want to be doing than some of the other people I've talked to. And I'm very hopeful. My day job's actually at a university. I work in student affairs with students. And my hope is that students who are in some of the careers that some of my guests were in to start will hear these things and think, okay, if this ends up not being the thing I want to get into, here's a path out. Here's an example of someone else who was able to take that skill set and move it somewhere else. And it's not every interview where I find something that will actually be useful to me. But definitely, this book has been a useful tool for me in the short amount of time that I've had it. And like I said, I think I'm going to have to go back, and maybe sooner rather than later, as you said, maybe go back right now because I'm actually in stage five. I'm going to have to go back and revisit some of the ideas and help break through and take that next step myself. So the book, are you celebrating the milestone? Are you at the top of the mountain right now and you're looking around? Are you just celebrating, or are you already looking ahead at what the next peak is for you?
No. Yeah, I've got about five other peaks, right, that we're actively working on. You know, the book is just one of those things. In some ways, that's the practical answer. The philosophical answer is, yeah, we certainly are going to celebrate. We're going to, my wife and I are planning something fun with the team that's worked very, very closely on this. And, you know, just off camera to my right is a guy named Kurt, who's been here a long time. He's an absolute freaking pro. So there are people that have worked very closely and tirelessly, still are, on this book. So we'll celebrate the launch of it, celebrate the future impact and the current impact of the book. But the book is just, you know, when we talk about the dream job and we say, okay, what do you do when you get to the dream job? What's it like? Are we sitting back in a hammock and drinking sun tea, or are we expanding the vision? And so the vision is that this book, no matter how many copies it sells, it's not about the book by itself. The book is one part of a strategy to get this philosophy and methodology out to people that, hey, you do A, have a purpose, and B, it's possible to get there. It's actually possible. And so now it's got to turn into curriculum. Then we're going to launch a coaching program, right, where I can get more people this message and help them when I'm not directly involved, right? How do we continue to grow and expand the show? What are the new platforms for the show, right? What does curriculum look like, not just for college kids, but high school kids, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what does a training program for people look like who don't need a college degree to do the kind of work they want to do? How can we at Ramsey Solutions meet them there? How do I take this assessment, the Get Clear Career Assessment, which is built to help people in the stage one? It's a great companion to the book. People can get it at kencolman.com. But how do we turn that into an engagement tool for companies? You know, so it's expanding the vision based on the mission.
Yeah, many other peaks. You clearly know what they are. And I would say I wish you success in getting to all of those peaks, but the book is still so new. I wish you success in getting the book out there and getting into the hands of other people who can benefit from it. They can find it, I imagine, anywhere books are sold, as well as on your website. Would that be correct?
Yep, that's right. KenColeman.com. If they want, there's a great bundle there for $40. They can get the Get Clear Career Assessment and the book, which, it's kind of like getting a supercharged compass through the assessment. And then the book obviously validates all of it and then begins to lead you up the mountain. So that's a great opportunity. And I love that you're among college students. I want to figure out how to get cases and cases of these books on campuses, because this stuff is not taught, mm-hmm, and it should be taught. So excited about that.
Yeah, you know, I think because it's not taught, that's why I feel like I need to do what I'm doing, which is explain to people that if you end up in something that isn't what you want, here is proof that you can move on to something else, because I work at the number one academically ranked institution in Canada. And so a lot of these students go in very specifically with one particular goal in mind. And I often use the example of doctors. I've written a number of med school application references, or med school references, I should say, for students. And the first five did not get in. And I worried about what they thought they would do next, because it was their one ultimate goal. And when they didn't get in, and one of them didn't get in three times in a row, how do you pivot to something else? And I wanted to try and show them that you have this educational background and you have this skill set, and here is what you can do with it if not being a doctor. And something like this book can help them in a much more in-depth way to do that. I'm trying to take the fear out of it, and you're providing very practical steps to figure out how to move on to the next thing and find that dream job and do everything you need to do to get into it. So hopefully, many people who are listening to this will go pick up a copy. They can also follow you on social media, watch the Ken Coleman Show. I'll put all the links to those things in the show notes. So check those out at careercrossroadspodcast.com. Ken, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. You're doing great work. Keep it up.
All right. That is Ken's career path up until now. After all that hard work, finding his way in broadcasting, and working his way to the top, Ken is now standing on top of Everest, looking around at all the other peaks that he now wants to climb. Before we get to the lessons of this episode, I have a couple other things I want to say. Firstly, if you are listening to this in November 2021, when it first comes out, you're probably noticing the lack of a sponsored ad, which I actually talked about in the interview, how I did have a sponsor starting in this episode. And that is a very long story, and I'll probably share more about that during my next update episode, but I just wanted to mention that so that the mention of a sponsor to Ken didn't seem out of place or like I was lying or anything like that. There is a bit of a story behind that. But if you're listening to this sometime in the future, maybe there is an ad. I have no idea, so maybe ignore this part. More importantly, did you enjoy my therapy session as much as I did? Not only did we get to hear about Ken's journey, but I got some advice from the guy who is known for giving career advice. So that's a pretty cool day for me. And I guess that's just one of the bonuses of having a podcast like this. Exciting times here at Career Crossroads. All right, time to talk about the lessons of the day. For lesson number one, let's talk about time. You heard the quote that I picked out of Ken's book. Everybody is all in for the dream as long as it happens on their timeline. The most impactful thing I learned from Ken, both in the book and in the interview, is that things take time. You're going to have to spend time getting clear. You're going to have to spend time getting qualified. You're going to have to spend time getting connected, getting started, and getting promoted. But if you do all of those things, eventually you will end up in your dream job. And once you do, the world will look a lot different. But all of that will take time. And this is absolutely one of those lessons that will be very applicable to me. You heard me talk about this timeline that I have put on myself, most definitely an unrealistic timeline. So I know that I need to go back and look at my roadmap and change my expectations and focus more on the long term rather than short term success. As for you, if you're out there and things aren't happening as fast as you want them to, yeah, welcome to the club. Take solace in the fact that you are not alone. It took time for Ken, and it's going to take time for me, and it's going to take time for a whole lot of other people to figure out how to make that pivot in their career and do all the steps required to get to that dream job. Tied to that, though, is the lesson that you need to celebrate the milestones. Yes, the dream job is the ultimate goal, but the hard work that you do along the way is what builds the stepping stones that will get you to your dream job. Those stepping stones have merit, so celebrate them. When you get a new job, celebrate. When you get a raise that you wanted, celebrate. When you connect with a new mentor that will help you navigate the path you're on, celebrate. Yes, you have an end goal, but celebrate the journey that got you there. Well, those are two of the things that I learned from Ken today, but if you learned something else, I would love to hear about it. So send me a message through the contact page of careercrossroadspodcast.com and tell me about what you learned. I think I'm going to spend some time now listening to some Larry King interviews to practice my technique, but I'm also going to go listen to the Ken Coleman show more, and I'm going to take Ken's advice and go back and read stage 5 of From Paycheck to Purpose and figure out what I need to do to move on to the next step. If anything from this interview resonated with you, I would certainly recommend the book. It was an interesting and beneficial read for me, and the link to buy that book is in the show notes. You can also find the links to follow Ken on all his social media accounts, and that is the same place where you can find the links to my social media as well, and links to places where you can support this podcast if you've enjoyed this episode. If you know someone who would be interested in Ken's career path, please share this episode with them. And if you want to hear more interviews like this, go to careercrossroadspodcast.com or subscribe to the podcast in whatever podcast player you're listening to this on right now. That will help you get notified when we have a new episode every Wednesday.